A number of presidential hopefuls appeared at the Poor People's Moral Action Congress, which took place this past week in Washington, D.C. Religion News Service national reporter Jack Jenkins covered the event. I am so pleased to have him back with us again on State of Belief Radio. Jack, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Poor People's Moral Action Congress took place in Washington, D.C., June 17th through 19th. Would you just describe that gathering?
The easiest way to understand it is that, you know, the Poor People's Campaign was originally a movement that occurred under Martin Luther King. It was the last major campaign he worked on before he was assassinated. Decades later, William Barber, a pastor out of North Carolina, and Liz Steele Harris, the pastor who's affiliated with Union Seminary in New York, have restarted that campaign. It's an idea of looking at how economics and poverty impact not only people of color and different minority groups, but also just poor people in general across the country, and trying to address the various problems and issues and policies that impact the poor. And so this movement was launched a year and a half ago, relaunched by Theo Harris and Barber. But after it was launched, they started participating in a number of protests across the country for various different groups. And at the end of that, at the end of that first wave of protests, they've now started to galvanize enough credibility and enough clout that they were able to ask a bunch of candidates to come and speak to them at a forum in Washington, D.C., and with a group of people, many of whom are lower income from across the country that traveled to be there. Now, I want to be clear, this was not a debate. This was not a group of candidates standing up there, getting asked a question and debating back and forth around about it. This was a forum, which is kind of mimics a style that is often used by local interfaith groups in urban areas, where they'll call on local candidates for mayor or for city council, and they'll ask them all the same questions. This isn't a place where candidates come in and give a 20-minute speech. In fact, each candidate was only given 4 minutes to give a stump speech, and then they had to sit there for about 20 more minutes and were asked questions by Theo Harris, Barber, and various people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the setting. This is kind of a movement occasion, not like an organizational occasion. So it was a really unusual format, I think, for a lot of these candidates, where the power was on the question asker, and they were kept to specific times for how they would answer these questions, and it wasn't a rah-rah campaign speech. In fact, people in the crowd were encouraged not to applaud so that they could get through all the questions.
Jack, how successful were they in getting presidential candidates to show up?
Well, they ended up getting around 10, and they got many of the front runners. Joe Biden was the first person on stage. Elizabeth Warren was there. You had Bernie Sanders. You had Kamala Harris. You also had some candidates who were polling at lower levels, like Marianne Williamson, and a few others. But they got a solid number. And actually, the first action ahead of this Congress was a protest in front of the White House last Wednesday. And when that was when a bunch of the same people who were attending this conference showed up to kind of decry the Trump administration, which they see as immoral. And when they held that protest, Pete Buttigieg, who is also running, Mayor Pete from Indiana, showed up to that protest as well and actually just stood there in silent witness. He didn't say anything. He was just part of the crowd and wanted to, as his campaign put it and told me, just bear silent witness to that event, and then tweeted about it later, celebratory wise. It was a really interesting moment where this group, which some would describe as the religious left or religious progressives, were actually kind of actualizing their power in a way where candidates felt obligated, the front runners felt obligated to show up and be a part of this.
I did see when Vice President Joe Biden spoke, he was very excited, it seemed like, being there. How did that go? And what emerged in the conversation? How would you describe that?
Well, it's important to note that these are kind of like they're the questions, the kinds of questions that they're asking the candidates at a forum like this are to hold the candidate accountable, right? They're things mm-hmm. like you're sitting in front of a group of people, many of whom are lower income, and you're asked directly, how are you going to, work? What are you going to do to address poverty? And, you know, Joe Biden was asked at one point by a woman named Francine from Mississippi, one of the poorest counties in the country, you know, how he would address how natural disasters and global warming are impacting lower-income people and poor people across the country. And then he responded to that. And, you know, it's important to note that Vice President Biden himself is actually very fluent and talks quite often about faith and his faith. And so he's very comfortable in that sense. But in this format, this might have been a format that didn't necessarily play to his strength. He's really good off the cuff. He's really good at speaking at length. And this format actually played better for someone like Elizabeth Warren. And I know that because I went up and asked that woman, Francine, how she felt about Joe Biden's answer to her question. And she said she wasn't particularly impressed with his answer, but she was impressed with Elizabeth Warren and a few other candidates and how they responded. So it was an interesting test for a lot of these candidates to be able to operate in a space where you're not going to get applause for your typical applause lines because the crowd has been told not to applaud. And it's an activist crowd and a faith crowd all at the same time. And you're only going to have, you know, two to three minutes to answer each question. Yeah. And they're tough questions. And so I would argue that, you know, someone like Elizabeth Warren actually, you know, outperformed Joe Biden on this stage this go round.
What stood out for you from what you heard?
Well, I think what was interesting was that they definitely, people had different layers of awareness, but there was a lot of awareness of how this constituency felt important to them. Like they understood, there was a moment when Kamala Harris was speaking where she said, they were kind of joking about things that they were frustrated about. She's like, oh, I don't want to cuss about that. I'm at a religious gathering, or it's sort of a religious gathering. And I felt like that kind of summed up a lot of how these candidates engage with this moment. Was this was a thing where you had faith leaders asking them hardline policy questions, and they knew in front of people that are a core constituency and that will turn out in several of the early primary states. And so I really, and particularly for South Carolina and in the southern states during this primary season. So it kind of seemed like a lot of these candidates saw this as a way to voters that a lot of them are having a hard time reaching and during this primary season. And so they wanted to tout their environmental proposals. They wanted to tout their economic proposals. They wanted to make sure that they were able to discuss, parts of their stump speech. But this really was the folks who were most effective at this forum were people who kind of got who were able to wrap a policy conversation in a human and faith-filled conversation with this constituency. That's what I heard land best, was when someone was able to tell a story about a policy and weave in faith. And so that to me is where the energy in the room was.
Poor People's Campaign leaders testified before Congress this week. What do we need to know about that?
Well, this is actually one of the second times they've done this. The last go-round that they were able to kind of get a forum was actually Elizabeth Warren is who helped them stage it a year and a half ago when the Poor People's Campaign also addressed Congress. And several people in the room were people who are now running for president. So I think there is an interesting pattern of seeing, the Poor People's Campaign, at least William Barber, as someone that these candidates wanted to be close to. But this go-round, it was a similar message. You're hearing both the faith leaders themselves, but also people who are impacted by poverty, people who are impacted by policies and proposals that they argue negatively impact the poor. There was a lot of that at this testimony because, one of the main principles of this Congress is to force lawmakers and presidential candidates to hear from poor people themselves. They argue that that's, a big part of the original Poor People's Campaign and something that they can inculcate into this new iteration, is that the core voices aren't just Barber and Theo Harris. The core voices that they argue would shift American domestic policy would be the voices of the poor themselves. And so that's everything from Native Americans to single mothers to folks who are struggling to make ends meet across racial and gender lines. And so that was kind of the kaleidoscope of folks you saw giving testimonies this week.
Close to one-third of Americans live below or near to the poverty level. And yet MSNBC's Joy Reid has pointed out that during all of the 2016 presidential debates, not one substantive question on poverty in America was raised. Who do we blame for this state of affairs?
Well, I, if you hear the people at the forum said, you would blame the DNC. And I should note that every single candidate, and there were 10, who spoke at the forum, was asked, would you support an entire forum on an entire debate, formal debate, televised debate on poverty? And every single one of them said yes. And every single one of them were asked, would you advocate for that? And every single one of them said yes. So Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden have all agreed to push for that a full debate on poverty. And, I should note that Joy Reid was one of the moderators of this forum. She was there, and it was live streamed on MSNBC. So I would be surprised if we don't see at least one question about poverty, given all the pressure that they're building on this. But, I think the ultimate blame for that, they would argue, lies with the party itself.
Why, Jack, was that such a taboo issue prior to these discussions?
That's a good question. I mean, it's not that economic policy wasn't discussed. It's not that policies that impact the poor weren't discussed. But this could only be raw speculation based off of my reporting. But, traditionally, in a lot of different elections in the past few decades, the core constituency to court for votes, and thus the core constituency that got a lot of political play and got a lot of political rhetoric spouted to them, were the middle class, right? Like, how many times have we heard presidential candidates talk about strengthening the middle class? They've said this over and over and over again for decades. And while, that is I think a lot of economists would argue that that is a strong and important point of discussion, it takes up the lion's share of the conversation around economics, whereas a focused kind of campaign on the poor, we arguably haven't seen that, since the 60s.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's something that is emerging now. I think there's a myriad of different reasons for why that is the case, but it's trying to shift that economic conversation between just talking about the middle class or even the wealthy and returning it to, the folks who are struggling the most in the United States, the poor.
What are the odds that this movement will make a lasting impact on the 2020 campaign?
Well, I would argue that they just this forum on its own was in many ways historic, in that it's highly unusual for this kind of event to occur. The religious left, and I should note that William Barber actually rejects the term religious left because he prefers saying that they're the moral center. But the this movement, I think it's interesting to me how much work many of the candidates have put into already trying to have, God talk, being able to talk about faith, and how many of them have wanted to get pictures taken with, whether intentionally or unintentionally, with William Barber in particular before they ran for president and since. That's a fascinating thing to me, because that says that they recognize him as an important constituency to reach, or he touches an important constituency that they can reach. My guess is because people like Barber and other activists have been very prominent throughout, under the Trump administration, because the quote-unquote resistance movement has kind of been the soul of the left throughout this Trump administration. The people who are decrying the Trump administration, the people in the streets, have often been led by people like William Barber or Theo Harris or others. And so I would argue that in many ways it kind of helped shape some of the points of conversation already. But to your original question, I do think this forum kind of put a flag in the ground. Mm-hmm. But I would be surprised if we don't see some of the questions that emerge in the coming debates, you know, not come from either voices that are similar to the ones we've heard at that forum, or even come from the mouths of people like Theo Harris or Barber or any of the folks who were on stage with them this past weekend. I think it would be difficult for me to imagine at least the Democratic primary season not have been impacted by the folks who were in the streets decrying Trump for the past 3 years.
Jack Jenkins is the award-winning national reporter at Religion News Service. His coverage of the Poor People's Moral Action Congress and other developments at the intersection of religion, government, and politics is well worth reading. You would also do well to follow him on social media. Jack, tell our listeners your Twitter handle, please.
You can follow me at Jack M. Jenkins, at Jack M. Jenkins on Twitter.
Jack, let me thank you once again for taking time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. Always love it coming on.